With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey, First Things First listeners, before we start the show, I wanted to tell you about our brand new Fox Sports app and website, foxsports.com, reimagined for the modern sports fan. Go ahead, download the new app right now. You don't even have to pause this episode. Every day on the new app and website, you'll see the top stories in sports, plus a rich world of written content, videos, social media, and analytics to give you a 360-degree view of the most important stories of the day. Streaming live TV has never been so easy or elegant. Every Fox Sports game, including all pregame and postgame shows, as well as the televised version of this show, just a click away. For the extra invested fan, we also go deep with real-time wagering lines, trending prop bets, win probability, and key player projections. So download the new Fox Sports app or visit www.foxsports.com. Now let's start the show. And good morning, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. Jenna Wolf, Nick Rice, Kevin Hart, Antoine Walker.
Kevin Wild, and Antoine Walker.
I love Kevin Hart.
Big upgrade.
Shows you what Jenna was watching on Netflix last night.
But Kevin,
he's upstairs. Let me bring you down.
We need another mic.
Kevin, come down. In the Northeast. There was a hurricane that ripped through. I hope everyone's okay. Knocked out power to a lot of us. I lost my internet, so I'm all kinds of crazy this morning. But luckily, not till after the games ended last night. We got a great show for you coming up today. Are we worried about the Clippers after what happened last night? Mm. Are we worried about the Bucks after what happened yesterday? Am I too worried about too many things? Probably. And Michael Vick is going to stop by, talk a little. Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes, Dak Prescott. Maybe Kevin Hart will join us. Who knows? But we start this morning thrilled to have Kevin Wilds, as always, with us. With the suddenly red-hot Blazers taking on the red-hot Houston Rockets last night. Who would be red-hotter? How about Carmelo Anthony? Melo, former Rocket, current Blazer. 15 points, 11 rebounds. Blazers get the win. They're now just a game and a half back of the Grizzlies for the eighth seed in the West. After the game, Dame Lillard was asked about Carmelo Anthony's success with the team. Take a listen.
I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. You know, I think it's more disappointing that people are surprised by it. You know what I mean? He's a Hall of Famer, like I said. He's a great teammate. And that's what we expect from him. You know, we put him in those positions because we expect him to make those shots. We believe he's going to make those shots. And we brought him here because we knew he would make a difference for our team, and he's been doing that. So no surprises here. We expect that from him, and, you know, I'm glad that he's here to come through for us in those big situations.
All right, Nick, I'll start with you. Clearly the Blazers aren't surprised by what Melo can do and has done. Are you surprised by Melo's resurgence this season, Nick?
I'm surprised he got this opportunity when it looked like the league had given up on him. I'm not surprised he's making the most of it. Listen, I picked the Rockets on this show yesterday. I've been very bearish on the Blazers' chances. I bet on the Rockets last night. I had every reason for when Carmelo hit that dagger three to be devastated. And you know what I found myself doing when I was watching it? A
rooting
little Tiger Woods fist pump. Yep,
yes.
Absolutely right, Kevin Wilds. You know why? Because Carmelo Anthony deserves his damn flowers from everyone in the media at large that acted like, because he had a bad playoff series against with the Thunder and he was a terrible fit in Houston, that he no longer could be a viable NBA player as long as he accepted and understood his role. The Blazers would be 0-3 in this restart and dead in the water without Syracuse great Carmelo Anthony. He hit two corner threes to force overtime in their first game. And in this game, it wasn't just this three. on the defensive end. He got a huge block and a steal in the final 3 minutes as the Blazers were trying to hold on to their lead. This is a 10-time All-Star, a 6-time All-NBA, scoring champion, most decorated men's basketball Olympian ever, and the greatest one-and-done college player ever. And folks just threw him out. Just acted, he became a punchline for some. He didn't fit in Houston. That didn't mean he was dead in the water. And so I'm happy for him. He deserves it. He's an all-timer. And Antoine, it was really, really good. It's been really, really good, Antoine, to see him have this week to start the bubble.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to the beginning. And you alluded to a couple things, Nick. One, obviously, the Houston situation, I think, was not his fault. I think that was Houston being impatient. You can't judge a guy off 10 to 15 games, especially a guy of his stature. I think, obviously, leaving New York and his little time he spent in OKC, I thought he was good in OKC. I thought he was calling a play a little bit too many minutes in OKC, but I thought he was good there. I'm so happy for Melo because he dedicated himself. This is a guy that got off to a pretty good start right before the pandemic, and then he came back and dedicated himself, his body, to getting better. He's playing a small forward position. They have legitimate bigs behind him to protect him defensively. So now he doesn't look as bad defensively. One of the knocks on Melo is that he couldn't play defense. He's making defensive plays now because he has legitimate big men that's behind him helping them out. So I think that thing played a part. But you got to remember, he's a scorer, Nick. One thing that Melo can do is put the ball in the basket. So for people to think that he can't not score the basketball is crazy to me. He can score at a high level. It's one thing you can always remember Melo for, and that's scoring the basketball. And with Portland, they're giving him an opportunity to score. He's playing 30-plus minutes. With those two guards, you didn't think he would get these type of opportunities offensively, but they figured out a way to put him into the offense, and he's playing great. And I'm so happy for him because it's very seldom that you get guys like Melo that get to finish their career the way they want to, and I give him a lot of credit. He's done the work that's needed, especially with his body.
And Wilds, you saw it. Wilds, you saw the respect from the quotes from the opposition last night. Great players and NBA players don't like when folks in the media, this is why Matt Barnes came after me about Andrew Wiggins. Because even a guy of Andrew Wiggins' stature, when a media guy says he's no good, guys that actually play get upset. So when you had the collective media Wild say, Melo's finished, he's cooked, he's done, he's a punchline, I think other guys, even guys that aren't his teammates, what Russell Westbrook said about him, are happy he's having this level of success, Kevin.
Yeah, so I did a project with Melo this summer. It was called Hoodie Season. I worked for a soccer company and said, hey, we need some stars involved. We want to do some behind-the-scenes stuff. So we had a meeting with Melo. I was like, Melo, like, what are your ideas?
Name
He's
trouble.
Like, I got an idea called Hoodie Season. I was like, oh, I'm into that. I was like, what is it? He's like, Hoodie Season is like, you know, Hoodie Melo that we're showing the video of. It's like, Hoodie Season is a mentality when you're getting locked in. It's because he didn't have a team. He was just totally locked in and trying to get ready. And what we're seeing now is a result from the viral sensation of Hoodie Season. Now, I know people are going to be like, no, Wilds, it's like there was so much hate for him, da-da-da. That was in every other part of the country except New York. If we can show the video, this was Dwayne's final game. And when Melo got the ball here and faked the shot, watch everybody, whoa! New York loves Carmelo. We're happy that he's doing well. And if we can throw up his stats there, Dusty. He's doing fantastic in the bubble. And, Jen, I'll throw it to you in 1 second, but I just want to talk about what Antoine said. When you talk about finishing his career, look, I think the Blazers get into the playoffs. We'll see how they do against Knicks Lakers. Nick is being very nice to Carmelo. We don't want to, you know, he's not so nice to the rest of the team. But I also think he eventually comes back to New York. That's going to be the way he finishes his career. So this is not done yet. He's still got another year in him at least. Sorry, Jenna, go ahead.
But Antoine, a lot of it is also that he's accepted his role now. He doesn't have to be the star of a team. And now that he knows who he is, and I think in Houston there was a lot of that pressure where was he going to go out there? What was his role? Was he coming off the bench? Now he can go out there. He's got good teammates around him. He's got good weapons around him that he can sort of be and play his game, and I think that's where he's thriving. Isn't that part of it as well?
Oh, without question. It's unfortunate that he had to wait as long as he did to get picked up. But, you know, good things come to those who wait. Portland was in desperate need of another score. They had a ton of injuries, and he got put into the right situation. That was the biggest problem when Melo was sitting out. Nobody knew where he could go, and would he be willing to accept the role? I think his press conference in OKC, when they asked was he going to start or come off the bench, did not help him out a lot with other teams, because teams felt like he wanted to be in the position that he's in now, and a lot of teams was not willing to give him that opportunity. But through injuries and taking advantage of an opportunity in Portland where they needed his help, he's flourished. And you got to give Melo a lot of credit. He dedicated himself. I got to go back to that. To be able to dedicate himself in this pandemic over the last couple months to get his body even better shape. And you can show your shows. He's playing extended minutes. You don't look at a guy like Melo to play 35, 38 minutes, but he's capable of doing that. And he's doing that very well and making shots late. That's when you know guys that got their legs, they're in great shape when they're able to make shots late. And that's one thing that Melo's done. So you got to give Melo all the credit for this run right now.
Antoine, I want to kick it back to you because I have a question for you about the similarities between what's going on with Melo and what happened with you. Because if people remember, you know, Antoine Walker most prominently, I think if you say to a fan, think of Antoine Walker, they think of you in the number 8 Celtics jersey doing the shimmy after shooting a 3. Like that's a 20-point-a-game guy. But then when Boston moved on from you after Danny Ainge knifed you, one of the many players he's knifed, we don't have to get into that, Jenna.
All right.
I think there was a bit of a narrative that, okay, Antoine Walker's done. Like, Antoine Walker's going to bounce around the league a bit, and he's done. And you get to Miami, and when you guys win the title, you started every single playoff game for them that year, if I'm remembering correctly. Like, do you see some similarities between what Melo's going through and where he's at now and you in Miami after you had been in Dallas and after you'd left Boston?
Yeah, of course, because I was with an organization that I started my career off with, that I had a lot of success with, was there twice. And then the opportunity came for me to be a free agent, and we had some young pieces around us to resign, and they chose to go a different direction. So as a player, you start to get confused. But luckily, I got an opportunity to do something that I never did in my career, and that's join a championship team. And I just took advantage of the opportunity. Pat Riley is a particular on winning. He knew what the role he wanted me to play, and I was willing to accept that role to change that image up, to show different guys in the league or different, at least the media, that people in the league, that I could play for a championship and I could play a role. I didn't have to be the main focal point on a team. And I went on to play with a team with Shaq and D. Wade and Alonzo Mourning, Gary Payton, you know, 4 Hall of Famers. And, you know, you add the posies of Donald Sal, Jason Wells. That's a loaded team, and I accepted my role very well. I was in the prime of my career, averaging 20-10 and can look for individual accolades, but I sacrificed to win a championship. So I look at Melo. I think Melo's taking advantage of his opportunity. And Kevin, you said that he's probably got another good year in him. He's not going back to the Knicks. Portland is going to be his place. Oh. Portland now is finally healthy. Okay. If you really think about what Portland's got going right now, they're finally healthy. Even if they do not make the playoffs, they got to feel really good about how their team looks going into next season with Melo at the small four. So I think this is something that can last for a couple of years.
Moving on to Tom Brady now. No doubt he's been working hard this offseason, not only to make sure his first year with the Bucs goes as well as possible, but also to prove a few people about him wrong. Maybe some of those people hail from New England, I don't know. Brady's latest workout included newest Buck with Sean McCoy, who had some high praise for the GOAT. Take a listen to this, guys.
He looked real good. I mean, and as he's throwing the ball, you know, I hear a couple of the guys whispering, like, dang, how many years do you think he'll play? And that's how good he looked, seriously. Me and Gronk talked about it. Like his will to win, his will to go out there and still keep doing it. I mean, once you see a guy like that kind of display that attitude, I mean, you want to be part of it. You know, that's like a sense of me, like, man, how much longer can I do it? You know, so he looked good today. He looked in good shape. He threw the ball very well. He like a coach with a helmet on.
I mean, give me
safety first for LeSean McCoy. Wilds, you're excited. You know you are. Nick, is there any question in your mind that Brady at age 43 can still dominate? Clearly his teammates who've watched him practice the last couple weeks think so.
Well, listen, far be it for me to disagree with all-time Kansas City Chief legend and Super Bowl champion LeSean McCoy. But here's my concern. My concern is that we have seen the clear evidence that Tom Brady, while maybe on the practice field as he's doing the DAC right there, is the same as he's ever been. Tom Brady in the game, particularly in the face of a pass rush, is not the same player he once was. Now, for Tom, this is a brilliant opportunity because he can, similar to Kurt Warner, who was written off after his time with the Giants and then had an unbelievable run with the Cardinals. Hell, not that dissimilar to Mike Vick after when he was out of the league and then came back with Philadelphia and said, he's a backup quarterback now, and then he almost won league MVP. Brady can say, I'm still here, America, and if he's great, the Bucs will be awesome. Like, the Bucs defense the last 6 weeks of the season was a top-five defense. They have all these weapons on the outside, Mike. If the to me, the biggest question mark is, do they have a great quarterback, a good quarterback, an average quarterback, or a below-average quarterback? I think it's going to be option C or D, an average or a below-average quarterback. But, Mike, if he's excellent, there's no reason Tampa shouldn't be an 11-12 win football team.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, when you look at Tom Brady right now, his physical attributes, it still looks the same as it was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. I don't see any deterioration, you know, just in his throwing motion, in his footwork, in his movement. You know, when you come to work every day and you see a guy like Mike Evans, you see Chris Godwin, it's limitless opportunities within the offense. You can't cover the whole field. So if Tom is just average this season, but, you know, Mike Evans continues to take the top off the coverage, he's a 1,000-yard receiver, and then you got Chris Godwin, who's going to compliment, and then Gronkowski, Tom's job is going to be way easier, and I think he knows that. You know, paired up with Bruce Arians and Brian Leftwich, you know, they know what they have, you know, within this team right now, and you know, so Tom doesn't have to go out and be great. Tom just has to lob it up to Mike Evans here and there, you know, give him an opportunity to stretch the field. You know, he got great backs in Shady and a couple other guys who can fill the void. So this offense is going to move, you know, the way it's supposed to move. And Tom has to be excited every day he walk in to this building and he's around his teammates, because the sky's the limit. Those guys wonder how long he's going to play, because they want to know how long the window opportunity is they have to win the Super Bowl, because they know it can happen with the GOAT.
Is there other footage out there that we don't have? Like, LeSean McCoy is talking about Tom Brady like we're looking at Madden Vic. And it's just normal old practice footage from my high school, it looks like. We had the same colors, Fitz Hawkins. So, Mike, I guess the question is this. How much of this – oh, this is my favorite move, though. How much of this is Tom Brady's reputation and resume – that LeSean McCoy is talking about? Because I don't see, great pass right there. I couldn't make that one. And how much of it is actual things that he's seeing? Like, is this more reputation than, you know, actual evidence?
It's definitely reputation. You know, when you think about what Tom has accomplished, and like I said, you look at him throwing the football at 43 years old, you see him dropping back. I mean, he looks like Tom Brady. And guys believe in that, they believe in him. And it's right now it's more verbal than it is physical. So they're gravitating to everything that he's saying and what comes out of his mouth. And that's a cool thing. You know, I think LeSean, he understands that, you know, playing with a great quarterback like Tom, you know, can enhance everybody. So it's not just about what they're doing right now. It's about what he's done in the past. And like you said, his resume. That's where it's all coming from.
You said it, Mike. Brady definitely has a share of weapons to choose from this season, that's for sure. Speaking of weapons, Cowboy up. Dallas has a bevy of them as well. Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and the recently drafted CeeDee Lamb. Amari Cooper loves this receiving core, says, quote, I think the expectation here is to have 3,000-yard receivers this year. Nick, that's going to help Dak Prescott for sure. What's the ceiling for Dak and this Cowboys offense this coming season?
The ceiling for the Cowboys offense is to be a top three offense in the NFL, to be the best offense in the NFC, and to be the leading reason the Cowboys make their first Super Bowl in a quarter century. That's the ceiling, and that's not wholly unrealistic given the personnel they have and given the trajectory that Dak, at least statistically, appears to be on. So much of the conversation surrounding Dak has been about his contract, but he's never hurt, and he is a – I don't think he's a great quarterback, but we have seen quarterbacks of the very good variety with those types of weapons take their teams on deep playoff runs. I have in front of me right here a few things. I've got – my all 256 game predictions of the schedule.
Yes.
And then I have on this folder
laminated
my predicted standings that have the Cowboys currently at 11-5. The back of this folder at some point is going to have my playoff predictions. I haven't quite gotten in the lab and made those yet. But I wouldn't be surprised if I picked the Cowboys to make the Super Bowl. If the biggest issue last year was coaching and they have a clear upgrade from Jason Garrett to Mike McCarthy, I think they did well this offseason, bring in CeeDee Lamb, Gerald McCoy, and I know they lost Travis Frederick, but they played without Travis Frederick in 2018. It is, given the controversy in Green Bay, the fact that I'm not sold on the Bucs. Now, I do like what Seattle did a lot. Like, the NFC's very, very deep. But, Mike, I think the ceiling for the Cowboys is to be a great offense, not a good offense, a great offense, and with the improved coaching, make the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I have very high expectations for the Dallas Cowboys, and I think, you know, where it's all going to stem from is, you know, Zeke being able to, you know, put up 9, 10 100-yard games throughout this season. The running game is going to be very important. You know, Dak's success is going to be predicated on how well they run the football. I also want to see the offensive line bounce back a little stronger this year. You know, I felt like the last 2 years, you know, it wasn't a regression, but it wasn't the best plan, and I think it hurt Dak at times. But, you know, collectively, you know, like Amari said, look, they could do some amazing things on offense. I mean, Amari's going to have to step up big, you know, and win his one-on-one matchups week in and week out. You know, sometimes he get lost, you know, throughout the course of a game. But adding CeeDee Lamb and some speed to the outside, you know, it's going to free it up for him. It's certainly going to open up the offense for Dak a little more. But, you know, for Dak, he don't want it any other way right now. He shouldn't want it any other way. The ball is in his hands. The ball is in his court. You know, arguably one of the best offenses, you know, in the National Football League right now. And I think he has to take it by the reins and run with it.
Mike, when we talk about 3 1,000-yard receivers, this is a list. I'm going to just read you some names. These are some teams that got close to having three guys. The Chargers had Austin Eckler. Oh, this is a different graphic. These are the teams that actually did it. So it's only been done 5 times in NFL history. Here are some teams that came close. Austin Eckler, 2014, the Patriots, Gronkowski, 2012, the Saints with Jimmy Graham, the Falcons with Tony Gonzalez, and 2012, Dallas with Jason Witten. The thing that all those names have in common, they're not wide receivers. So is the idea, since it's only happened 5 times ever, and the last few times it's happened, you got a mix of running backs and tight ends, is there such thing as having, like, too many wide receivers, or there's just not enough plays to go around? How difficult is this to, you know, give three guys 1,000 yards?
Absolutely not. When I was in Pittsburgh playing with Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, and Marcus Wheaton, I looked at those guys, and I felt like each one of them could have 1,000 yards receiving. They was explosive. Huh. You know, they had speed in and good in and out of breaks. They knew how to play the game. And when I look at this receiving core, and when I was thinking about this morning, you know, I thought about those three guys that I played with in Pittsburgh. You know, it's very well possible. I think it'll all be dictated by, you know, how well Dak distributes the ball and the play calling from Mike McCarthy.
Drawing a blank this morning. So the Rockets, Houston Rockets, got out-rebounded by 25 in their loss to the Blazers last night. Two words, gentlemen, small ball. can't win them all. That's six words. Six words, gentlemen. Nick, the Rockets getting out-rebounded by 25 is blank.
Budgeted in. This is such a silly story. They expect to be out-rebounded. Listen, they budgeted in like this. You know what the cannonball run is when you try to break the record of driving from New York to Los Angeles? If you're actually, not just a movie, but the actual attempt, if you're actually trying to break that record, guess what? You know going in you're going to get a bunch of speeding tickets. You're fine with it because that's part of the plan. You can't have everything in life. The Rockets are trying to surround the court with as much shooting as possible, make it impossible to defend them, and be one of the best offenses in modern NBA history. They've done all that. Now, the downside is you're going to be out-rebounded. So the fact that this continues to be a story, they know it. They're okay with it. They've been out-rebounded every game since Covington's been there except for one, and they're 13-8. So, Antoine, to me, this is budgeted in. They expect it, and they're fine with it.
Now, this is terrible, Nick. If they have any aspirations, of winning the NBA title, they can't do it getting out-rebounded by 25. If you look at it right now, they're in the fourth seed. They're going to probably finish in the fourth and fifth seed. So I give them, they probably do beat the Utah Jazz in the first round. But you get to the second round, you got the Lakers. The Lakers got size. You can't get past the Lakers not being able to rebound the basketball. They made 19 threes last night. You make 19 threes and you still lose. They got to accomplish what they wanted to do on the offensive end, but you got to be able to rebound the basketball. It's going to be Achilles heel for them. It's not going to be, they're not going to be able to overcome this. Too many big teams in the Western Conference, the centers that can play, they're mobile, and they're going to get killed inside, Nick. I'm sorry. This is terrible. It was a fun strategy. It's good to watch the threes, but they won't be able to advance deep into the playoffs.
Yeah. Nick, you know I love a good metaphor, so I'm going to play out the cannonball run thing. I think it's teams. I don't think it's just a driver. I think you get a teammate. So if you and I were in the cannonball run and we're trying to talk about our strategy, which road to take, whatever, and you turn to me and you say, Wilds, I got a way to shave some time off of the race. I say, what is it, Nick? Smart guy. Say, we don't stop for gas. Everybody else be stopping for gas. We won't stop for gas.
That's not
boom.
It.
Right from New York
that
to L.A.
It.
We save time.
That's
while
a
they're
terrible
stopping,
analogy. You're a doofus. That's not
it's
it.
It's a fundamental part of the game, rebounding.
Okay,
and you need gas.
Fair, listen,
I like it. We should do that.
You're not going to be able to be the type of team they're trying to be. How about this? Let me put it a different way, and then we can move on. If they were a good rebounding team playing this style, they'd be the greatest team of all time. Because if you're going to hit 23s, you're going to have almost no turnovers, you're going to have so many structural advantages, you are opting into a certain type of disadvantage. It's just glaring. And so this is the Spurs saying we're not shooting threes. They know they're not shooting threes. It's intentional. It's so we'll see. I agree. They won't beat the Lakers. They have to hope they don't play the Lakers. But it's not going to be because of rebounding, Jenna.
I'm going to go rank Cannonball Run again. I missed that. Moving on to TJ Warren. Oh. Yep. TJ Warren's got his own story and drawn a blank. He's been on fire for the Pacers so far this bubbled restarted season, averaging almost 40 points a game. Nick, back to you. TJ Warren's bubble basketball through three games has been blank.
Cash considerations. And that's because that's what Phoenix gave him up for. Phoenix. Now, credit to Phoenix, the 3-0 in the bubble. Good for them. They had a great win yesterday that made me very happy. But Phoenix and Robert Sarver, always thrifty Robert Sarver, they give TJ Warren a four-year, $48 million contract, and a year into it, when he averages 18 a game, they're like, hey, Indy, you want him? You can. They traded him for $1.1 million, and now he's giving you 40 a night in the bubble. So, I think it's a great nickname. TJ Warren should be called Cash Considerations. He should ask the NBA for one game. That can be on the back of his jersey if they were to play Phoenix in the bubble. And it is a brutal, it's like when the Suns in the height of the Nash era sold a draft pick. It sold a first round pick. Like, giving up a quality player for $1.1 million is just unacceptable. and it sets you back as a franchising as well.
I think this is sensational. I think when you look at guys that need a coming out party, I look at this like when I played with the Celtics and I had 49 against the Washington Wizards, and Juwan Howard and Chris Webber were their forwards. That was like my coming out party. I think this 53 that he put up in the bubble was TJ Warren's coming out party. He's always been a great scorer. If you follow his career, he's great at North Carolina State. He's been good in Phoenix. That's why Phoenix gave him a contract that they did, Nick, because he could score the basketball. But his efficiency, this guy's a 47 to 52% from the field for his career. He can shoot the three. He's got a great in-between game, good size. He actually, you know, you look for that perfect fit. The Pacers are a perfect fit for him to go along with Victor Oladipo. Now they got a legit two guard to go with the three. So they got a good offensive, these two wings are going to be able to make some noise. It's going to take some time. Victor Oladipo has to come back. But what TJ Warren is doing right now is just sensational.
I got a fire take here. Ready for this, America? I'm pro-trophy yes. culture. You know when people get mad, like, hey, everybody gets a trophy. I'm pro-trophy culture. More trophies, the better. So the idea that the bubble is, we've already voted. It's like no MVPs in the bubble. The bubble doesn't count. Rookie of the year, defense player, nothing. So the bubble's living in its own bubble. New awards for the bubble. And guess who the MVP of the bubble is? Boom, TJ Warren. Points, he's first. Middle and sixth. Field goal attempts. And Nick, who gets to vote? Go guess who gets to vote on bubble MVP. The people are just on the bubble of voting for the real MVP. You can be the captain of it, buddy.
You get a vote.
I was really,
we'll do it on
I
the
was
show.
On your side. I was trying to support you.
And now I'm giving you a vote. Why are you mad at me?
Ending with, hello, my name is Luca. I live on the second floor. Mavs All-Star Luka Doncic finished with 34 points, a career high 20 rebounds, 12 assists in Dallas's overtime win against the Kings last night. Youngest ever, by the way, to record a 30-20-10 triple-double. That's a stat. I'm on your corner, Nick. Nick, Luka's performance last night was blank.
Salt in the wound, because who'd it come against? The Kings. The Kings, who in Luka's draft after the Suns, again, in their infinite wisdom in that franchise, pass on Luka for DeAndre Ayton, and Ayton's a good player. The Kings could have had Luka. But Vlade had allegedly some beef with his agent or manager or something stupid.
Yeah.
So they take Bagley. And then the Hawks are sitting there, and they're like, we love Trae Young so much, and I like Trae a lot. How about we just give you to Dallas for Trae Young and an extra pick? So, like, it's just salt in the wound. You could have had a future multiple-time MVP. And this isn't Monday morning quarterbacking from me on this. Luka, I'm on the record. He should have gone one in that draft from before
that
draft. And the Kings not recognizing a gift fell in their lap at two is just brutal. And it's even more brutal since Bagley's hurt again and Antoine isn't even helping him.
Now, this is incredible, Nick. I have to admit, I almost jumped on the bandwagon after yesterday's performance. You almost talked me into it. First team all NBA. I got to give you credit. That was an incredible performance last night. I have to give Luka that. Probably put him on the first team all NBA after last night's performance. So, it's actually strong on what he's been able to do. When you really watch him to be able to lead this Mavs team. The Mavs roster is not that great. I mean, Kristaps Porzingis is good. We got Tim Hardaway Jr. They got a couple pieces, but he's playing unbelievable. I love the confidence, the swag that he plays with. Good call, Nick. I have to give you credit on that one. I got sold yesterday.
There I was watching the Mavs
another
game
one, another
days
one on
ago.
The bandwagon.
Well, you're an influencer, Nick. You're a big deal. I was watching the Mavs game the other day, and the announcer just randomly said, hey, and the Mavs, of course, have the best offense in NBA history. I said, What? Oh, best offensive rating. That's what I said. I literally did a double take and no one was in the house. I was like, what did he just say? Nobody was there. It's the weirdest set. It's the best offense in NBA history. Yeah. We're not talking about it. It's a mind boggler to try to figure out. Shout out to Dean Oliver, who I like.
But that's the, I guess you got to give him credit. And Antoine's on the bandwagon, and Nick is making things happen. So I guess I believe in him. Also, Kevin Hart was heard enough later.
Slovenian and son. So proud.
Back to the shot heard around the world. She said dramatically, how should Clippers fans feel this morning after their shocking loss to the Suns last night?
Oh,
this
is first things first. Who cares? Doesn't matter.
All right, guys, time for stories to start your morning. Here we go. The Bucks blow it. The Bucks got stunned by the Nets last night. I'm pretty sure the Nets got stunned by the Nets last night as well. Giannis only played the first half, but Milwaukee still gave up 73 points with him on the floor. Nick, Giannis mentioned playing in close games, and then he watched from the bench as his team lost. What did you make of the loss last night?
A number of things that are real concerns that happened here. One is, when the starters were playing, the Bucks, the number one defense in the NBA, gave up 73 points to the G League Nets. Can't happen. The other thing is, I don't care what your plan is. If your plan is to rest Giannis and starters in the second half because you think it's going to be a blowout, when you're down 8 at halftime, and as you alluded to, Jenna, you've made the point that we need to play in close games. Antoine, I think Bud's got to adjust the plan. Let him play so they can get some of that experience. It's not a huge thing, but it's something to watch for here, Antoine.
I think because it's the Brooklyn Nets, they're going to see them in the playoffs. I think, obviously, you do want to get a little, film on them. But I think you don't want to give up much. I think you want to – it's tough to get motivated, even in the bubble, even though you've been out, a few months. It's tough to get motivated to play that Brooklyn Nets team. And they was just flat. I wouldn't read too much into it. They'll be able to move on from that. The Bucks are too good of a team. They'll race that game and get right back to schedule program.
Giannis getting thrown on the ground, getting dunked on. To me, I buy your point, Nick. I don't know if you play him for the whole second half, though. I don't know what you do. I also don't understand, Antoine, if you want to be quick. I know we got to move on to the next story. But I don't understand that the Bucks saying that they have to figure out late game situations. Like, this is not youth basketball. Like, do you think that's an actual problem that they don't know what to do at the end of games?
It could become a problem. I mean, maybe they've had situations where they don't make the right decision. You want to make sure Giannis trusts his teammates and believe that they can make shots, and he don't have to be the hero. So you want to put those type of things in perspective a little bit to make sure they make the right plays.
All right, let's move on. Little Celtics slide. Celtics and Heat. Boston falling to Miami last night. This with Jimmy Butler on the sideline for Miami. Nick, is this Boston loss something or nothing?
Oh, it's something, and I'm viscerally angry at the producers of this television show because we've waited to the very end to talk about the Clippers losing a game they shouldn't have and the Celtics, and now we don't have enough time for me to annihilate both these teams. Hey, Boston, you could have locked up the 3 seed. Instead, you lose to a Jimmy Butler-less Miami Heat team. Cannot happen. It's unacceptable to lose this game when Butler's not playing. If they had won, Antoine, they're the 3 seed locked up. They can rest whoever they want the rest of the way. Now they're going to be in a dogfight to the final day of the bubble to avoid falling to the 4 line, which is important because you want to avoid Milwaukee. That's a terrible loss for Miami, or for Boston.
It is a terrible loss for the Celtics, but one thing you got to understand, Kemba Walker's not right for whatever reason. I know they're trying to bring him back.
He's not going to be.
But they got to figure it out. I mean, I think he's hurting them more than helping them if you look at these games. So they got to figure it out if they want to advance and make a deep run in the playoffs. But I wouldn't put too much on it.
At least they didn't sign him to a huge contract.
I still think they're going to get the 3rd seed.
Look, he played 19, 22, now he played 26. They're slowly ramping up his minutes. I also have beef with the producers. Celtics follow Jimmy Butler-less Heat, but we don't say, Celtics with Kemba on a minutes restriction falls to Jimmy Butler-less Heat. Like, once the Celtics are full speed, I think we'll be okay.
If Jason Tatum continues to get haircuts, He had 4 months of no basketball and his knee wasn't right. It's not going to get right.
It's not great.
No.
I have issues with the producers. I don't think Kevin Hart's actually on this show. Speaking of taking L's, Devin Booker hit a turnaround game-winning buzzer beater last night to take down Kawhi and the Clippers. Kawhi and the Clippers have now lost 2 of 3 inside the bubble, to Nick's lifelong point about Kawhi and the Clippers. Nick, you starting to question the Clippers' viability as a title threat?
No, of course not. I'm not starting to question it. I've been questioning it all year. And I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take for folks to be like, oh, might be a problem. You ever go to somebody's house and within 10 seconds, you hear that one of their smoke detectors is low on battery and it's beeping? And you're like, hey, you got a low, what's that beep? And they say, what are you talking about? And you're like, that beep. And they've gone deaf to it because they're so used to it. They've gone, they don't even notice it anymore. That is America with every uninspiring Clippers game. It doesn't resonate because we've become used to it. Oh, wait till Lou Williams is back. Oh, he's back. Oh, that's just a bad matchup. Kawhi wasn't playing big minutes. He plays 37 minutes. Devin Booker, you're built to stop perimeter scoring. Booker puts 37 on your head. And it wasn't because Kawhi and Paul George weren't guarding him. They guarded him more than anybody. Oh, well, they don't have rim protection, but now they brought in Joakim Noah. Well, not shockingly, that experiment seems to have lasted a couple games because he couldn't get off the bench. They don't know what their rotation is. Landry Shamet is not getting the minutes. Instead, Reggie Jackson inexplicably is. And they were lucky to make this close at the end. It took a Paul George airballed three that landed in Kawhi's hands, another offensive rebound, a bad foul call just for the Clippers to tie the game up. So, yeah, Antoine, all the warning signs have been there all year. Folks don't want to acknowledge it. I wonder what it's going to take for people to acknowledge it.
Well, it's a couple things for me, Nick. One, this is the reason why I picked the Lakers. I love the Lakers' focus. I love LeBron's focus. Going into the bubble right before the pandemic, I loved everything what the Lakers are doing. That's the reason why I picked them to win the title. Now, the problem with the Clippers is that they can't get their 12, 13 guys on the same page. You go into the bubble, you got all these distractions. Now, don't get me wrong. I understand family emergencies. I believe these guys have real emergencies going on. But you can't get the core together to work. This 8 games that you had in the bubble was to get ready for a championship run. I questioned the focus of the team. I questioned Doc Rivers, and Doc is a great coach, allowing guys to kind of get away with some of this petty things that they're getting away with. And like I said, I know it's real family emergencies and things happen, so you got to take that very serious and give guys a chance to handle that. But they're just not playing. They're not getting enough reps together. They're not getting enough games in together. It's always something. Somebody's missing. And they're going to go into the playoffs this year not having that chemistry going right there. And teams are too good in the West that every night's going to be a dogfight. No matter what seed you are, you're going to have a dogfight in the series. And also, I don't want to take anything away from this. The Phoenix Suns are going to be very good. Well, Monty Williams is building there. With Ricky Rubio, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton, those guys, they got a good core building there. The Phoenix Suns are pretty good, so I don't want to take anything away from them. But I just don't like the Clippers' focus. It just does not seem like their focus right now is to win a championship.
So I buy the Sun stuff. Nick, I'll get your reaction to this quick story I'll tell. I was watching a game with a famous basketball player once. It was Spurs Heat, I think, and LeBron made a great shot. This person was rooting for the Spurs. And he said, great shot. Great job. I said, I thought you were rooting for the Spurs. He says, I am. He said, that's the shot they want LeBron to take. If he wants to make it, if they lose that way, that's the way it's got to be. But that's the game plan. So do you buy, this is what I'm buying, Devin Booker made like the shot of the bubble. It was fantastic. They soaked him with water.
Sure, but you can't be in that spot. So, it's not about the shot. It's about the fact that you're in a tie game with the Suns. No, it's about the fact that you're in a tie game with the Suns in a game you want to win. It's about the fact that this possession should have ended. The Suns missed a shot. Zubac gets the rebound. But because the Clippers don't have – what do you do in that spot? Call timeout. You have 7 seconds left. You have the ball. Call timeout. Advance it to half court and draw up a play. But they don't know what – in that moment, Zubac just threw the ball up and it gets stolen. Again, the Clippers are clearly a good to very good team. They have been anointed by many as the favorites, as a great team. And for who, for what, for why? We don't got evidence of it. We got 5 games left in the regular season. 5. They're still working on their rotation, still working on their chemistry. Okay, good luck with it.
We've been saying this all season long for the Clippers. Get your chemistry together before the playoffs. The playoffs are basically here. Antoine, thanks. We'll see you tomorrow.